January 24th, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, will you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Flint?
Present.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
We have quorum.
Thank you. So, some important announcements before we get started. The Complaint Screening Committee, according to ARS Section 32-2081, subsection H, may dismiss complaints on the agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website under ARS 32-2081, subsection H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda under ARS 38-431.03, subsection A2, to receive confidential records, or subsection A3, to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Jean Galvin. Please keep in mind that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon the parties present. Please use initials only for the patients, for the children, and the complainant. In addition, do not state specific diagnosis in open session. Keep in mind that the content of many of these records is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Keep in mind that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. A person or a representative of a person who has filed a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement to the committee of up to 5 minutes, only when prompted by the chair. Additionally, the licensee or respondent who is the subject of the complaint will also have the opportunity to make a brief 5-minute statement, only when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statements are made. Please note that only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, the respondent, and their legal representatives may unmute themselves at that time. Please keep in mind that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter. So, with those important preliminaries in mind, let's go to the first complaint on the agenda, which is case number 23-53 against Arthur Horvath. Dr. Stewart, would you please provide a brief summary to the committee? You're muted, Dr. Stewart, if you're speaking.
Thank you, Mr. Dinar. Arthur Thomas Horvath is a licensed psychologist in the state of Arizona, license number 5618.
Thank you.
An overview of the complaint is that Dr. Horvath provided testimony in another state. This is the state of Montana, in which he is not licensed. He's licensed in both Arizona and in California, but not in Montana. The complainant, TG, looks like licensed with another board in Montana, not the Board of Psychologist Examiners, but another board. And the complainant indicates that Dr. Horvath testified in a state where he was not licensed. The complainant also indicates that Dr. Horvath overstepped his scope of competency in the complainant's point of view, misdiagnosing the mother in the child custody case in Montana, and that Dr. Horvath's behaviors and standards were not in compliance with psychological practice standards. Dr. Harvath responded that he did not have to be licensed in Montana in order to have an exemption of delivering services not to extend beyond 10 calendar days. He asserts that all of his behaviors and interactions with the Montana case did not exceed that length of time. Dr. Horvath indicates that it was not his duty to diagnose the mother, but he was simply making comments about the mother's behaviors. And he did make some recommendations along with the effect of the diagnostic impression provided by the complainant who had seen mother in treatment for over a year. So that's a thumbnail sketch. And we do have a late appearing item from the Montana board that licenses psychologists. And they say that after review of the complaint materials, that the case was administratively closed on October 2nd, 2023. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. So at this time, let's see if complainant TG is present. I don't see TG initials, but that may be because they might be appearing via telephone call. So if TG, you are on the telephone, please unmute yourself, and this would be the time for you to make a brief statement to the board. To the committee, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I did not receive a response from the complainant when I provided her with the meeting notice.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So in that case, let's go to Dr. Horvath. I see you're present. Thank you for being here. You may make a brief statement at this time, and I believe you're represented by your attorney, so your attorney can unmute herself, Ms. Patain, and you can make a statement as well.
Thank you, Mr. Dinar, and members of the board. Hopefully you can hear me. I think I did everything right. Okay.
Yes.
this is Cynthia Patain for Dr. Horvath, and we're respectfully requesting today that this complaint be dismissed. For an overview of this, the complaint filed against Dr. Horvath is based on a few misunderstandings by the complainant. First, the complaint alleges that Dr. Horvath made a diagnosis based on a phone call with a client. However, his role in this case was as a forensic psychologist in a court proceeding, as you heard earlier from Dr. Stewart. Dr. Horvath was asked to review opinions of another professional and comment on them and also make recommendations for the mother in this case. His actions did not constitute the practice of psychology as it is defined by ARS 32-2076. He was not conducting an assessment, diagnosis, treatment, or correction of a disorder in a client. Again, he analyzed the opinions of someone else that had been made and offered a rebuttal to those opinions in a court case in Montana. That was not the practice of psychology. Of note, as you heard Dr. Stewart say, the Montana board, we were just notified within the last week, the Montana board dismissed the action there. And they stated, you do not hold a license in Montana, and thus the board's jurisdiction was limited to examining whether there has been unlicensed practice. After reviewing the complaint materials, it appeared that the conduct alleged is exempt from licensure pursuant to Montana code. So the dismissal by the Montana board tells us that they did not consider Dr. Horvath's work in Montana to be the practice of psychology. and therefore they dismissed the complaint by administratively closing it. The complaint that was filed in Montana was identical to the complaint that was filed in Arizona, and the complainant is the same in both instances. A second misunderstanding by the complainant is Dr. Horvath's perspective on how the problems at issue in the case were treated. And I don't want to overstep and say any diagnoses, but Dr. Horvath didn't make diagnoses, but other people involved in the case did. So you'll tell me if I step out of line, I think, and if I'm not, if I should not say what I'm saying. So the complainant's perspective is that an addiction is a disease, and an alcohol addiction is a disease, and that abstinence is required.
Ms. Patin, I think we are going very close to mentioning the diagnosis, and we have seen the material, so you just refer to the diagnosis as the diagnosis.
Okay, so I apologize. I knew I might cross the line, so thank you. So Dr. Horvath's perspective is different, and it aligns with the National Institute that is identified in the materials. And it's authority that is widely recognized in the practice of psychology and among psychologists and medical professionals as well. And it gives a different definition of the diagnosis and the disease at issue. Both perspectives are valid. Both are reasonable. But just because Dr. Horvath differs from that of the complainant doesn't mean that his is wrong or that he's incompetent, as the complainant asserts. I think she actually characterizes him as being impaired. It seems to me she meant incompetent, but nonetheless, it doesn't mean that he's impaired or incompetent. It just means he has a different perspective. And you can see in the materials that his perspective is based on widely recognized authorities, and it is valid and reasonable. As a result, we're respectfully requesting that the complaint be dismissed. Dr. Horvath did not violate the Practice Act in Arizona. He didn't fall below the standard of care. He didn't violate any administrative code or regulations. So there's no basis to move forward with it, and a dismissal would be appropriate. And Dr. Horvath is present today to answer any questions that you may have for him. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Patin. At this time, let me see if any of the committee members have questions for Dr. Horvath. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
I'd like to hear from Dr. Horvath first, and then maybe submit my questions.
Thank you. I have no further statement to make.
In that case, Mr. Chair, I do have some questions. And this may be most appropriately answered by Ms. Pompain, the representing attorney, or Dr. Horvath. What materials did you review that you were asked to review to formulate an opinion?
I reviewed the transcripts of half a dozen depositions. I reviewed other documents. I spent, I could pull up the document list, but I spent approximately 20 hours reviewing materials in preparation to testify.
Were some of these materials psychological evaluations and assessments?
There were some report. There was a report from the treating therapist and the notes of his sessions with her beyond, and there was a brief evaluation by him at the beginning, but it was primarily legal depositions.
So your attorney asserts that you were not practicing psychology when you reviewed the materials and rendered a psychological opinion? Let me ask this. Perhaps you have a different opinion of this. Do you maintain that you were not practicing as a psychologist?
I may not understand the legal distinctions here. I was not engaging in clinical practice from my perspective.
But you were engaged as a practice of a forensic psychologist.
That's how I would describe it, yes.
Okay. And so in that admission, you were practicing psychology, and this is contra to what your attorney asserts. Now, the board of in Montana already provided a waiver on this state, and you state pretty plainly in your response that the 10 days, as long as the services provided are within that 10-day framework, that you are exempt from being licensed. So you were practicing psychology, but you were exempt from having to be licensed in Montana. Is that more accurate, Cynthia?
I was strictly going by the definition in with respect to a particular patient or client. And the person at issue here wasn't necessarily a patient or a client. He was more, his work was with respect to the client, but it was more to inform the court and rebut another expert. So it wasn't with, right, like he was practicing psychology with respect to a particular patient and making an assessment, coming up with a treatment plan for her. But to the extent that anything he did or said there was deemed to be the practice in Montana, he did get the exemption so that he right. wouldn't be stepping on any rules, right. breaking any rules.
And so in Arizona, and Ms. Galvin will correct me, in Arizona, that does fall under the scope of the Board of Psychologists Examiners if someone is practicing as a forensic psychologist. So he was practicing as a forensic psychologist. I just wanted to clarify the attorney's opening statements that he was practicing as a psychologist, but he had a waiver to do so and in the state of Montana. And the state of Montana has already reviewed this and closed the case administratively. Am I correct in that, Ms. Fontaine?
Yes, they closed it stating that they did not believe he was practicing without a license there. That's what the letter specifically right. says. Right.
The reason
that we were focusing in on he wasn't practicing psychology per se, as it is defined in Arizona, is because the complaint says that the complaint centers around the allegation that he made a diagnosis based on a phone call. So we were trying to distinguish, was not making a diagnosis of this person. He wasn't coming up with a treatment plan. He wasn't engaging in the practice of psychology with respect to this person and trying to treat or diagnose or do anything that's defined in ARS 32-2061.
So maybe Ms. Galvin could clarify a little bit.
And Dr. Stewart and Mr. Diner, thank you. I do understand Dr. Stewart's confusion, because Ms. Paintain's opening, there was, in my opinion, a mischaracterization of the finding of the Montana Board. The Montana Board did not find that he was not practicing or providing psychological services. They found that the services he was providing fell within the exemption, but there was not a finding that he was not practicing psychology.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Galvin. A follow-up question for Dr. Horvath. In the complainant's statements, she says that you dismiss the SASE as not being relevant or appropriate at the time for the mother. Is that, can you address that a little bit, please? The SASE, and maybe explain what SASE is.
The Substance Abuse Subtle Screening Inventory is a widely used screening instrument to identify whether someone should be assessed for alcohol problems. it can be administered in several different ways. In the instance administered here, the entire lifetime of the individual's history was obtained. And that's part of what led to the misdiagnosis, because the DSM requires symptoms to occur, criteria to be met within a one-year time frame, whatever that 1 year is. But in this instance, 20 years of symptoms were collapsed to justify a higher diagnosis than I thought was indicated. And the subtle screening, the SASE, again, subtle screening inventory, based on my reading of the literature, is no more accurate than simply asking someone about their drinking. And so I said that it had use as a screening test, but I didn't view it as being of particular use as an assessment.
Right. Thank you so much. And that's certainly consistent with my review of the literature as well. And my use of it over the past many years, the individual taking the instrument selects what period of time they are responding to. Is that correct? Like within the past 6 months, within the past year, or as you say, in this case, over a lifetime. Is that correct?
I'm not familiar enough to recall. I think in this case the examiner selected the time frame.
Okay. Good. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I have no further questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Any further questions for Dr. Horvath or Ms. Patain? Hearing none, let's go into our deliberation of this case. Keep in mind that deliberation is the time for the committee members to discuss and deliberate the case amongst themselves without any interruptions. Dr. Stewart, since you are the lead, would you please begin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I think Dr. Horvath was within his scope of practice, practicing forensic psychology in another state. Apparently that other state has a waiver that one does not have to be licensed in that state if they limit the provision of services to a certain amount of time. And from the reports and statements from Dr. Horvath, he was practicing within that scope and is exempt from being licensed in the state. As to the complainant's assertion that he dismissed a particular interview instrument, I think he explained that very well in terms of his behavior and why he did not place a great deal of emphasis on that instrument, especially given if it was the examiner, the complainant, who selected the lifetime alcohol use or lifetime use. I'm having a real hard time coming up with any issues of unethical standard practice. I'm not seeing it.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Flint.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Stewart, I am in full agreement with you. I think that when one is testifying or even just being a collaborative peer support of another person in questions, there's a way to have two people who are very, very competent look at the issue at hand in many different ways. And that doesn't mean that any individual of those are wrong. I did spend some time looking at the specific transcript entries, and I think that in my perspective, they very much align with the licensee response, and I didn't see any specific concerns either.
Thank you, Dr. Flint. And in as a matter of discussion, I agree with everything that was said by Dr. Stewart and Dr. Flint. In addition, what I was thinking when I was reviewing the materials was that the you know, when somebody testifies in a court proceeding, the person is within sort of the supervisory control, if you will, of the presiding judge, and that many times is sort of, you know, checks or tempers the kind of activities that the witness as an expert or otherwise does in their professional capacity. So I don't see any concerns under Arizona statutes that, you know, that would make any activities that Dr. Horvath performed in Montana come within the ambit of the unprofessional conduct definitions.
I have a motion if the chair would.
Yes, Dr. Stewart.
I move that the case against Dr. Horvath be dismissed.
Mr. Chair, I second that.
All right, there is a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Hearing none opposed, the motion passes. Thank you, Dr. Horvath and Ms. Patin, for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
All right, then that takes us to the second case on the agenda, which is 24-16 against John Moran. And Dr. Stewart, you are again the lead on this, so will you please provide us an overview?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, a contentious child custody case that we're all too familiar with here on the board. We see that Dr. Moran holds license number 1062, and this is the complainant is the mother. The complainant indicates unprofessional conduct as being a factor of the complaint, as well as promoting the illegal use of psychologists and practice of psychologists of another person. So the complainant states that Dr. Moran is promoting Ms. Lewis Tome as a psychologist, even though Ms. Lewis Tome is not licensed in any state as a psychologist. The mother also indicates that she had a truncated phone conversation with Ms. Lewis Tome. And again, she has a complaint there. She says that Dr. Moran recommended to the court that the mother be evaluated for quote unquote anger issues. And she objects to that, saying that she was never a patient of Dr. Moran's. Dr. Moran's response is that the mother's attempting to evade the various orders of the court by this complaint and other behaviors. This case never went beyond intake, apparently. Apparently, it's still in civil litigation. There is a court requirement for the sale of marital properties in order for the proceeds to pay for the court services of Drs. Moran and other folks, and that has not been resolved at this point in time. And so the case never got beyond that. Dr. Moran explains that he did not recommend an evaluation. He just stated in passing that the court might consider such an assessment. As to promoting a non-licensed psychologist as a psychologist, Dr. Moran indicates that this is not the case, that Ms. Judith Lewis Tome is referred to as a clinician and a coach in the literature for his practice. And that's my thumbnail sketch, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. So at this time, let's see if complainant TM is present. I see a TM in our participant list. So TM, if you want to unmute yourself, this is the time for you to make a statement to the board of up to 5 minutes.
Okay. I can start now. Okay. During a court proceeding, my family was ordered to participate in therapy with Dr. Moran. I never met Dr. Moran. None of my four children met Dr. Moran, and there was no contract signed for therapy with Dr. Moran. Upon review of Dr. Moran's contract, I objected to several unethical requirements as addressed in my complaint. Dr. Moran responded by writing the court recommending a reversal of custody from me to my ex-husband, a known perpetrator of domestic violence. In fact, as my ex-husband has had three protective orders against him, and I have a no contact order, an active no contact order right now. Dr. Moran established no therapeutic bond, not even contact, yet made a life-changing and dangerous recommendation as a psychologist licensed by this board. Dr. Moran's contract stipulated that I be dishonest with my children about the intention of the therapy. This is an illogical and damaging expectation, as at the time my children were 17, 16, 15, and 12. Dr. Moran expected that I would break my children's trust by not letting them know what was going on. Dr. Moran's contract also stipulated that I sign away any rights to resources to recourse during his therapy, knowing that his therapy would likely be harming to his participants, even saying in his contract, by signing the agreement, the patients acknowledge that the clinician/coach cannot guarantee physical safety during the IC or in any subsequent services provided. The parents further acknowledge the clinician cannot guarantee against bad faith or abuse of this process by any participant. Again, this is a domestic violence case. Dr. Moran's practice of psychology should attempt to do no harm, yet he insists that participants sign away this expectation. In his writing to the court, Dr. Moran used exaggerated, colorful language that expressed an undue anger and bias towards me. He made unsubstantiated conclusions, including, as you will see, Ms. Mangus crossed through multiple provisions of the informed consent document. They serve to indicate her reservations about the process and, taken together, lead us to the conclusion that she will not agree to the terms we deem necessary for conducting the intake consultation. And with that, the court ordered intense reunification therapy. Dr. Moran also told the court I needed therapy so that I might examine my extraordinary opposition to the course the court has determined to be the best interest of my children. Dr. Moran has no basis to make recommendations for my own therapy simply because I questioned his contract. My reservations were merely to protect my rights and safety of that of my children. The January 25th, 2023 court order states it is ordered directing the parties to participate in intensive reunification therapy with Dr. John A. Moran. This order directed the parties to participate in intensive reunification therapy. This was not an order directing reunification at any cost, and certainly was not above the state's mandate of child's best interest. As outlined in my complaint, Dr. Moran has violated 32-2084C, number 1 and 2, 32-209112C, D, W, X, and double E. 32-2061, 16, double D, and ARS 32-2061, 16, G. Dr. Moran has caused undue emotional distress, duress, child endangerment, and the real threat of us losing our residence. I am asking that the psychology board sanction and discipline Dr. Moran to the fullest according to the rules, codes of ethic, and law for his professional conduct. Also, Dr. Moran agreed to take this case under bad faith as he was planning to leave the country and spend the summer in France. Dr. Moran attempted to reassign the case to Judith Louise Thum, who is not licensed or even credentialed in the country. Dr. Moran is complicit in Ms. Thum's attempt to hold herself out of the public as a licensed professional, as evidenced on documents signed by Dr. Morant, as well as Dr. Morant's request that court appoint Ms. Thum, very much suggesting she is the same level of board vetted license criteria. And I'd like to hold up this document, which shows her credentials on here. And this is his filing. And it says on here, reunification therapists, plural therapists, request for clarification. So he's saying they're both therapists, not one. Finally, I believe this process would be more productive if the complaint was able to, the complainant was able to review the licensee's response prior to this meeting. I understand I will not be given an opportunity to refute any of Dr. Moran's testimony, and I can only presume his defense will be that the court is his client. This does not absolve Dr. Moran of his duty he owes to me and my children, nor does it absolve him of the duties and ethics of his the licensing board. Additionally, Dr. Moran was appointed merely as a therapist, not some other court appointment role that allows him the freedom to operate outside of the ethics requirement of this board. Thank you.
Thank you, TM, and thank you for being here. At this time, let's see if any of the committee members have questions for TM. Hearing none, let's go to Dr. Moran. I see Dr. Moran, you're here. Thank you for being here. And I think you're represented by your attorney, Dr. Akins. So if you want to unmute yourself, you may make a brief statement, or your attorney may make a statement on your behalf.
Mr. Dinar, are you able to hear me?
Yes, Dr. Akins, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm both on my phone and partially on camera, so I'm going to...
So, Dr. Akins, I think we are getting some sort of an echo. So maybe you unmute your Zoom. That way we can see you, but then we can hear you through the telephone line that you're calling in.
Are you able to hear me now?
Yes.
Very good. Okay. I'm not sure what's going on with the Zoom today. I'm using the proper information, and I sent an email to Ms. Michelson and other board staff, but no one responded back. So I ended up trying to call in, and then all of a sudden I did get a message that I could go ahead and sign in. So in any event, let's proceed as best we can. By way of introduction for the record, I'm Farron Akins. I'm counsel for Dr. Moran. I know he has a few comments to make. I'd like to just... also state for the record that there are some things that were presented today by the complainant that are not a part of the written response or the written complaint that we've responded to. And I would ask that if there's any of those new points that board members would like to ask about, that you delay that and give us the opportunity to respond, because it's not really unfair for us to have to deal with this on the spur of the moment. In any event, I'll turn things over for Dr. Moran to introduce himself and to address the committee.
Thank you, Dr. Akins. Dr. Moran, you may proceed.
Good morning. I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me to appear today to refute issues brought against me by complainant TM. While I recognize that she feels deeply aggrieved, her complaint appears to be an attempt to evade court orders mandating her family's participation in reunification therapy that I was appointed to facilitate. We never got that far because TM simply would not cooperate, and ultimately I had to request that the court allow me to withdraw from the matter because of her complaint. As regards any other aspects of TM's complaint, I believe I did everything properly in my court-ordered role, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. I do respectfully request that the complaint against me be dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Moran. At this time, let's see if any of the committee members have questions for Dr. Moran. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Moran, thank you for being with us this morning. The mother held up a document that appears to show your letterhead including Judith Lewis Tome, DIPL-PSYCH. Can you address that for me, please?
Well, the document that she held up was not my letterhead. It actually originated in Ms. Tomei's, if you will, office. That Ms. Tomei received a master's degree, the equivalent of a master's degree in mental health from a university in Germany. And so the credentials that she has, that she earned through that education, is psych-dipl. And so though that document, which was entitled Informed Consent for Intake Consultation, made it clear that her role is as a clinician and as a coach, that she, when the document was submitted, she included those initials on the document. I recognize that even though there are her credentials, that they could be misleading, and that probably in the future I would suggest to her that admitting those documents as a thing, as well as within the substance of any of the documents that we prepared together, such would be advisable.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Moran. I recall reading in the materials in your response and just now in your opening that you requested to be relieved from the obligation. You requested of the court to relieve you of being involved in this case. Is that correct?
Actually, I twice requested that the court relieve me of involvement in the case. The first time I was appointed in January, and I think that it was perhaps in February, that I wrote the court and notified the court that I couldn't accept the assignment because the assignment was included, based on my memory, that the therapy be completed really by May. And at the rate at which progress was being made towards that end, I could tell that I would not be able to meet that goal because I was leaving for France in June. And so I asked to be relieved from the case. The court did not act on that request. I made a second request to be relieved from the case the day after I received the complaint from the board notifying me that I was being investigated.
Thank you, Dr. Moran. Have you heard back from the court at this point or no?
Yes, I have. The court has relieved me of the appointment.
Okay. And you submitted that in your documents today?
They were, that document, well, Mr. Akins, has that document been submitted? You obtained that from the court, as I understand.
Yes. I think if you will check with Ms. Michelson, she can confirm receipt of the order from the court permitting withdrawal.
Okay.
Dr. Stewart, to confirm, that order is in the materials folder, and it reflects on November 16th of 2023 that the court reviewed his request to be released and approved it.
Thank you, Ms. Markson. Thank you, Dr. Akins. A follow-up question. Did you explain, if you would please, your comment that the court may wish to order an evaluation from a forensically informed person regarding TM and anger issues? Can you address that for me, please?
Well, of the more than 100 cases that I've been involved in, I've used a similar set of agreements, if you will, or guidelines for the service, and I've never had a client object even to a fraction of the, perhaps one or two items and TM objected to probably 20 of the conditions, if you will, or agreements that are in the informed consent for intake consultation. That during the court hearing, I won't say that because we don't have a record of that. But in any case, it was clear to me that the courts had concluded that it was in the best interest of the children that reunification therapy occur. And that based on the extent of disagreement reflected in TM's crossing out of the conditions on the informed consent for intake consultation, that it was clear to me that there was a resistance for whatever reason against the process, which was going to prevent it going forward as the court wished it to do. And so typically, or in the past, the court's custom has been when the court appoints me and I say, I don't think I can provide the service that the court deems necessary, the court oftentimes seeks, well, what other alternatives? Can you suggest other alternatives for me? And so in that spirit, I said that the court may wish to consider having TM address the amount of resistance that she has. And and that was the spirit under which that was the line of thinking under which that statement was.
Thank you, Dr. Moran. And to follow up to that, were you licensed in the state of Maryland before coming to Arizona, before being licensed in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay. If I may ask, how long were you licensed in Maryland?
About 2 years.
Okay. And in Arizona, I see that you've been licensed here for some time. And what you're a trained psychologist, so you have conducted interviews of people with various stages of resistance. Are you used to identifying people with issues of resistance or anger as just a normal part of your practice and as duly appropriate by your training?
Yes, the cases that I specialize in, and this is one of those cases, is often referred to as resist-refuse dynamics, because the family members are resisting or refusing contact, the children are resisting or refusing contact with the parent. And so the dynamics are, what is that resistance about within the family? And there are certainly multiple sources that resistance can emerge from. So I am very familiar with resistance dynamics within families and assessing the severity of that and trying to address it.
So you would consider that to be within your scope of practice then, would you not?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much. Mr. Chair, I have no further questions at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Flint?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Dr. Stewart. Dr. Moran, I just had a couple of clarifying questions for you, if you may. Because one of the issues at hand is the use of the coach in your practice, I'm still a little bit confused at why and how you use her services. It's pretty clear she's using a designation that could be, in my mind, easily misunderstood by a layperson. And that is of one concern. But why do you, as the licensed psychologist, need to use her services as a coach within the state to perform the duties that you need to perform in these cases?
Well, one of the primary approaches that's used in these cases is developing parenting skills or co-parenting skills, and sometimes emotion regulation skills or even cognitive regulation skills in various family members. And so as a coach, he can assist in that type of skills development.
So a coach is helping to change human behavior. And is that not a therapist role in your mind?
I think a coach is supporting the individual's development of their skills in directions in which they wish to go.
Okay. There was, and I apologize, I did not write down the specific page number. There was an assertion that Ms. Thome, is that the correct pronunciation? Thome, thank you. Writes reports for you. And is that accurate or is that inaccurate?
That's inaccurate. That any of the correspondence between the court and me was authored by me, that she would review it and make some editorial comments. The agreement that we had is that it would be sent out through her office, which is in Arizona.
And so purely kind of a more administrative home base here, so to speak. Okay. I think that clarifies my question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Flint. Any further questions for Dr. Moran at this time? Hearing none, let's go into our deliberation of this case. For those in attendance, keep in mind that this is the time for the committee members to discuss the case amongst themselves without any interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees, or any other individuals. Dr. Stewart, since you are the lead, would you please get us started?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. Yes, I think this again stems from a contentious child custody and reunification of between children and parents case. As such, it doesn't appear that the case and Dr. Moran's involvement ever got beyond the intake. It appears that, services were held up on account of inability of funds to pay for the services. And so everything was suspended. Dr. Moran has since requested of the court that he be removed from the case. And apparently that has been confirmed by Dr. Akins, as well as Ms. Mickelson. The part about Judith Tomei being referred to as a psychologist or implied being a psychologist in the letterhead, I think Dr. Moran addressed that these are just did not come from his office, but from Ms. Tomei's office. And he suggests that she not use those credentials or appearance of credentials in the future because, as Dr. Flint pointed out, it may be misleading. And especially if Ms. Tomei is serving as a coach and clinician, to include those documents of what appears to be diplomat in psychology would be very misleading. And so I guess in the future that will be corrected. I think Dr. Moran is certainly within his scope of practice to identify persons as being angry or resistant. He has a lot of experience in child custody and reunification, and from that has a lot of practical experience as well in parents of being resistant. I'm not seeing anything that rises to a level of unprofessional conduct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. As a matter of discussion, I was my ears sort of perked up a little bit when I saw Ms. Tomei's involvement in the practice. But I think what I'm trying to sort of figure out is, the designation of therapist doesn't really implicate our statutes because, the psychology statute says any word that includes the root psych in it. And so if someone is holding out as a psychologist, then that is an issue. But therapist on its own doesn't implicate that statute. But then the question is, the diploma, the DIPLE psych, is that holding out as a psychologist in Arizona? And I think a truthful designation of the degree that Ms. Tomei has from Germany was what was disclosed today in Dr. Moran's statement. And if that's the case, I don't think that necessarily implicates that same statute, which requires, people who are using the designation, who are using any word with the root psych to be licensed psychologists in the state. And to the extent there is some concern regarding supervision of Ms. Tomei's work by Dr. Moran, I think I'm satisfied with the statements that Dr. Moran, you know, does his reports, and you know, it's more of an assisting role rather than an independent role from Dr. Moran's practice. So those are my thoughts in terms of, you know, any potential concerns. And I don't think there is anything that rises to the level of unprofessional conduct as it is defined in our statutes. Dr. Flint.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Stewart, if I may just add a tiny statement to that. In agreement with as the rules are written, I'm having a hard time doing some direct connections to something that was explicitly perhaps done wrong. I would like to offer just a little recommendation to be very careful about coaching roles encroaching on therapy, perhaps. And as you co-work with this individual and you hold the license, I just wonder about your implied responsibility for what happens with this case. So I just ask that you maybe perhaps look at those arrangements and make sure that she is really truly in a coaching role, and that's very well defined. It's a very slippery slope between the two. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Flint. And yeah, that's an important reminder, I think, for Dr. Moran going forward. Any further discussion? Yes, Dr. Stewart.
I have a motion if the chair wishes to entertain it.
Sure, please do so.
I move that the case against Dr. John Moran, case number 2416, be dismissed.
I second that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. There is a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Hearing none opposed, the motion passes. Thank you, TM and Dr. Moran and Dr. Akins, for being here.
Thank you, committee members.
All right, so that takes us to the third case on the agenda, which is case number 24-22 against Catherine Tarr. And I'm the lead on this case, so I will provide the committee with a summary. Dr. Tarr was issued a license in Arizona in 2009, and she also holds a license in California, which was issued in 2018. She currently resides in California and provides, in a virtual capacity, services to two patients in Arizona. In December of 2023, MA, who is also a licensee in Arizona, submitted a complaint against Dr. Tarr, alleging that she was experiencing significant psychological impairment that may impact Dr. Tarr's ability to practice at this time. There are several allegations that the complainant presents to the board. I'll maybe summarize some of them. Dr. Tarr is MA's friend and colleague, and she's experiencing a psychological impairment of a severe nature that may impact her ability to safely practice. And MA believes that she has a duty to protect the profession and the Arizona public, so therefore she files this complaint. So some of the allegations against Dr. Tarr are that she represented herself as a psychologist and engaged in a few unprofessional activities, such as broadcasting on Facebook Live and reading texts while driving a motor vehicle, disclosing information about her romantic partner, who she identified as her King of Cups, soliciting referrals for a 6-week pre-marriage and pre-divorce boot camp she's developing that will cost participants $250. Inviting MA and other listeners on the Facebook group to come stay with her at her house to give her an excuse to not drink alone. Speaking about her son and his father and, you know, how she, quote unquote, fibbed a little about the son who she identified as a normalizer and her center. She announced her intent to take the California bar exam without attending law school. She disclosed her history of having therapy with a psychologist in California. She stated that she had experienced a wine and fentanyl overdose. She disclosed her husband's mental health diagnosis and her intent to sue his treatment providers for not discouraging his alcohol use during their divorce. And there are a few additional allegations as well, which I will not go through at this time, but they are stated in our materials. Our board staff conducted an interview with Dr. Tarr on December 27th. And in that interview, it appears that Dr. Tarr sort of jumped from topic to topic and went on a few tangents. The licensee's response is that, you know, due to the seriousness of the allegations, this complaint that is scheduled for today's review, appears she has some problems with reviewing the complaint so soon. She was notified of this due date in the complaint notice and was sent, which was sent electronically in December. So that is my summary of the matter in front of us today. And at this time, I see complainant MA is present. Thank you for being here. You may wish to make a statement to the board at this time of up to 5 minutes.
Distinguished chair, members of the committee and staff, licensees, counsel, complainants, and guests. I'm here today just to support the difficult work of the board in protecting the public, the practice of psychology, my colleagues, myself, and our clients. I'm available to answer any questions, although I don't have any more recent information than what I've already submitted. Thank you.
Thank you, MA. Any questions from the committee members for MA at this time? Hearing none, let's see if Dr. Tarr is present. I believe I saw her momentarily.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We just admitted her into the meeting. She may be trying to connect to audio right now, so let's pause for a moment to allow her to connect.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, I have just a question, just an inquiry that either the chair might answer or Ms. Galvin might answer as we're waiting for Dr. Tarr to connect. One of the issues is that Dr. Tarr was intending to apply for a California law license without attending law school. I know that some states have had, and maybe you can know better than I, Texas in the past, one has been able to, quote unquote, read the law without going to law school and then undertake the law exam. Do we know if California has such an ability to do that?
Dr. Stewart, that's a good question. I mean, to my knowledge, you can graduate from an unaccredited law school and take the California exam, but I'm not aware of a rule where you can read into the bar, as you know, in the old days that used to happen. But maybe Ms. Galvin has more current information on that.
I am aware anecdotally of an ability to be admitted to the bar at a lower level than a regular conventional attorney without going to law school. Some training is involved, and the bar that you take differs from what is used in the typical admission process. But I That's literally all I know. Okay. I do know there's an alternative path.
Okay, thank you so much.
And in Arizona, for example, there's the licensed legal professionals, which is lower. So it's like a paralegal level that is a recent development. Recent meaning, you know, in the past 5 years, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Flint.
Again, while we're waiting, just a matter of business, Mr. Chairman, in the records, there was reference to working at Midwestern University, where I am currently employed. I cannot recall that we even crossed paths, so I do not feel the need to recuse myself from this case.
Thank you, Dr. Flynn, for that clarification. I think that's important to put on the record.
Mr. Chair, I just admitted her from the waiting room, so maybe she's trying to join from another device. Let's give it a moment. Dr. Tarr, are you successfully connected? We can see you. Can you hear us?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry, my computer died this morning. My charger's not working, so I had to upload Zoom on my cell phone real quick.
Okay, very good. We can see and hear you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dr. Tarr, for being here. Do you prefer to go by Dr. Snyder or Dr. Tarr? I just want to make sure I'm using the right.
Until my divorce is final, this will be Dr. Tarr.
Okay, thank you. So Dr. Tarr, at this time, if you would like to make a statement of up to 5 minutes, you may do so.
Yes. So I'd like to begin with, I had a medical condition and then a major life change going on in a divorce situation. And I had... In the past, during my recovery, I really went down with a pretty serious autoimmune problem that Marlo didn't see. I do not consider Marlo to be my friend.
I'm sorry, Dr. Tarr, we are using initials for the complainant, so please refrain from using her first name. I apologize for interrupting.
All right. Well, this is, you know, a new learning experience for me, so... I do not consider this to be a legal or ethical evaluation. I think it was fraudulent. I think it was deceptive. I think it violated the APA ethics code at a time when I was looking for support from friends and family, many of whom do have cancer in the group, from my Boyles community, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. I grew up in a town with 1,000 people, and I had a heart attack. Now, I don't think that the complainant really understands the nature of the stress that I was under, and I do not consider Facebook to be a place where we conduct undercover psychological evaluations on our friends. Last time I checked, we were allowed to have a personal life. Now, I did do a quick review of Marlo's Facebook page for the public to see, and I saw that she does actually advertise, and she says that she's SMI and non-gender. So I don't know how my personal space made it to the board of psychologists, but I would like to turn this around on Marlo, and I would like to be curious about why
I'm sorry, Dr. Tarr, you're still using the first name of the complainant. We need to use just the initials MA, please.
Okay. The non-friend. So I thought I had a group of friends and happy people who are healthy. When they're going through a major life change, they reach out to people who love and care for them. I live in California. And COVID rolled in. I'm a mother and soon to be, you know, ex-wife. And so I don't have a lot of friends in my community in California because COVID rolled in right after I moved here. And then in my, you know, we went into lockdown. So I reached out to an online friend group, and I thought that I would be safe in that group to receive support and love from the people who care about me. So I consider myself, you know, to be a very high functioning, very intelligent, educated professional. I was a professor for 10 years educating psychologists in the state of Arizona. And I think that the complainant non-friend forgot her ethics. And so I actually am looking at malpractice, and I'm looking at defamation of character. When I really reviewed her possible competition of my business, I hadn't launched anything because I don't work on Facebook, but I did indicate in my written communication to the board that I spent $10,000 and I was working on a TEDx talk for public speaking and a thought leader business accelerator program. So this is interfering in my business development as well, but I kind of wanted to just get divorced first because that is considered to be, you know, did you make the money while you were married or divorced? So I thought filling out my divorce paperwork was the last thing I'd have to do. Now, because I'm in Orange County, I actually market myself through Psychology Today. People search the 92629. This is a very religious community over here. My politics have no business to anybody but myself. Although I did grow up in a Republican community, and Orange County is Republican, but I tend to kind of swing a little bit toward the non-binary in the middle. So I have a little bit of negative vibration going on toward my non-friend, who actually, if you would think about a thought disorder, they would have had concern that I might have been some sort of dangerous situation for my 9-year-old, and they might have called the crisis assessment team over here in California. If I was a danger to the public, to the non-friend, then you would actually call Orange County Sheriff's Department, and they could have rolled in on me and done a pretty good crisis assessment on me to determine if I was dangerous for my 9-year-old son or anybody in Orange County. Now, the last time I checked, a thought disorder, even somebody with really severe OCD, they have thoughts of hurting themselves or somebody else. So Marlo told me to go practice the occult over here in California, suggested I use AZ Ramp, and suggested on her own, in her own arrogant structures, that I surrender my license, which I thought that was for the board to decide, not a singular person, right? I think I trust psychologists in general, and because I have been through real serious midlife issues, I believe that our methods work. So if our methods work, then I should be okay, and I should be allowed to say I'm okay, unless the complainant non-friend doesn't believe in the psychological methods or the science. When we look at the neurobiology of attachment and trauma, a lot of it has to do with the book she's burning on meditation, but I saw those on her cursory examination of her Facebook page. So I think this is a business-to-business competition or some sort of, I study depth psychology, so I was classically analyzed by a Freudian. He made it into the complaint, and we look at the Oedipal or the Electra complex and severe mental deterioration. So I have a bunch of witnesses who can attest to the fact that Marlo, the complainant, actually didn't hear me correctly. I didn't say that I overdosed myself on wine and fentanyl. We have a fentanyl problem over here in California, and I was working with some of my Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. We're a very fundamentalist community. We believe in God. Call us crazy. So psychospirituality and...
Dr. Tarr, will you please summarize, because I'm sure we'll have questions and you can develop some of the facts.
In summary, this was fraudulent. You need consent to do a psych eval, and it was incompetent. So in summary, this is an APA ethics violation.
Thank you, Dr. Tarr. I have a few questions, if you'll allow me to ask you some. So could you speak to the allegation that you broadcasted on Facebook Live and read texts while driving a motor vehicle?
You know, I had my phone down. I was on Balboa Island. I did not read texts while driving. You know, and I think about the police, and I think about what is the role of the profession of psychology, and I think about whose job is it, and what is our professional responsibility? What is our professional responsibility? Now, I did, you know, take the California driver's exam over here, so I do know that I'm human. Number one, I am a human being. And then after Mass on a Sunday, I went on Facebook Live with my sister-in-law, and Marlo hopped, the complainant hopped on. Now, if I'm the only human being psychologist to ever, you know, have their phone in their car, I was connecting in a friendly and loving way to the complainant. And this doesn't feel like love and it doesn't feel like care. But I could do a survey to see if anybody texts their text messages in the car. I was on Balboa Island leaving Mass.
All right, Dr. Tarp, I got an answer to my question.
What does that have to do with my professional license? I'd like to ask that question. I really have a problem.
Well, Dr. Tarp, there is a complaint, and you know it's the job of this committee to evaluate the complaint and you know see what. You know, what your response is to the allegations in the complaint. So that's all we are trying to do at this time.
What it is.
So what is, so there is an allegation about you disclosing information about your romantic partner and calling him King of Cups. Would you speak to that?
Okay. I surmise is an opinion. Now my lover and I mean, would it have, he doesn't want me to say his name, number one. For fun, I pull tarot and study astrology. It's kind of fun. I pulled our tarot, and he came up the King of Cups. He smokes a cigar. He kind of looks like Freud, so I call him Siggy and my King of Cups because we have, and I am, his sexual object. So that could be your next question. Go check out Heinz Kohut and Otto Kernberg and find out why I would be his sexual object. I'm not a non-binary. How do I know that the complainant does not have sex with her husband? Now, maybe I have
I'm
sex.
I'm sorry, Dr. Tark. I'll remind you to stick to answering the questions.
That's right. I guess my irritation is getting the best of me this morning because I was in a rush after I took my kid and dropped him off at school.
All right, my next question is, there was an allegation that you invited MA and other listeners to come and stay at your house to give you an excuse not to drink alone. Could you please speak to that?
My grandpa Oli would say that's bullshit, all right? I don't need an excuse to not drink. I could drink alone if I wanted to. You know, I could do that. Now, I don't have a drinking problem. MA has a drinking problem. I work with Native Americans, and when you're about to do some sweat lodge and some other healing rituals, you can't have any substances in your system at all. So my Native American sister-in-law and MA and some of my friends, I'm going through a divorce, and I thought it'd be nice to have some friends out and some family. And I invited MA in love. Now, unless she got her feathers under a ruffle because she doesn't actually do anything like drink or have sex or do anything like that, I don't know. I actually believe in God. And the fact that I had theosis was also in the complaint. So I can address that too, unless somebody wants to identify with it. Does somebody need to have the experience? This is my honest and very candid response to this unethical and illegal deception. You have to have a very good reason to sneak in on
something. All right, Dr. Tarr, I got your answer to my question.
Good, good, that's good.
Can you speak to the allegation that you solicited referrals for a six-week pre-marriage, pre-divorce boot camp that you are developing that will cost participants $250?
So, yeah. All right. So I went and compared her cost on her website for her enterprises down to earth. There's no diversity. Respect. Now I'm going, yes, I did not solicit directly. I was practicing where I actually market that 6-week core program. So I have it called my Contain Bioni and Womb Orb. I have a hard time asking for cash because I work for the insurance companies. So I have been working up the courage to ask for cash. And it's $250. And I live in Orange County, one of the wealthiest areas in the United States. And I know that there are plenty of people who for 6 weeks, it costs $4,000 just for a divorce consultation, $6,000 if you hire your divorce. Now, she doesn't even screw her husband, so I'm sure they're just friends. But when you're going through with my husband, who's a very wealthy man, my husband is a very wealthy man. Now, my King of Cups is even wealthier than my soon-to-be ex-husband. So the sole custody situation was my dominant, aggressive, manipulative male husband using his money to drag me through the courts. Now, I only work for the insurance companies, and I got sick because the stress took me down, and I had a freaking heart attack.
All right, Dr. Tark, thank you. Let's move on. Can you speak to your intent to take the California bar exam without attending law school?
Yeah, that's right, because I happen to have been in gifted programs my whole life. And I went to really good universities. And in California, it's one of four states. And my King of Cups is a corporate and mergers guy. And he's been divorced before. And I had the judicial system. And I helped a bunch of people who I worked with, who are the judges and lawyers sitting on my couch. I helped them pass the bar. So I had a little challenge with my King of Cups. And I said, I bet I can pass it by July because I happen to be smart and a really skilled test taker. And you can Google it. And you can pass it, and you don't have to go to law school. One of four states, and California is one of them. You don't have to take the LSAT. You can sit down, and you can take the California bar. So I thought, why not for fun?
All right. So I think you stated earlier that you did not experience a fentanyl overdose. I just want to give you a chance to clarify that statement.
And perhaps we can go into executive session if that would be more appropriate.
What did you say?
All right, let's go into executive session. Thank you, Ms. Galvin. I make a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
The purpose of that would be to discuss confidential health information and receive legal advice if necessary.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Galvin. Please say aye.
Aye.
None opposed. A motion carries. So at this time, we'll go into executive session, Dr. Tar, because this is, you know, personal information that is personal to you. So we want to give you a chance to openly speak about any of those problems without worrying about the, you know, the confidential nature of that and, you know, the fact that we are in a non-public meeting.
Mr. Chair, I'm just informing the public and the committee that all committee members, Ms. Galvin, Jennifer Michelson and Dr. Snyder, Dr. Tar will be sent or prompted to enter the breakout room right now.
All right, looks like we're back. This is an open session meeting of the Board of Psychologist Examiners Complaint Screening Committee. It's 10:12 a.m. We are still questioning Dr. Tar as to the allegations in the complaint. I have no further questions to ask Dr. Tar at this time. Let me see if the board, if the committee members have any questions for Dr. Tar.
I have no further questions.
Nor do I, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So then at this time, let's begin the committee's deliberations. Please keep in mind for those in attendance, the deliberation time is for the committee members to discuss the case amongst themselves without any interruptions from the complainant, from the licensee, or any attorneys representing either of those parties. Since I'm the lead, I'll begin deliberations. So When I was reviewing the materials for this case, I was concerned with sort of the cumulative effect of the allegations on the licensee's practice. And I think based on the materials that I've reviewed and observing Dr. Tarr's responses today to some of the questioning, I have some serious concerns as to Dr. Tarr's continued practice of psychology, at least as far as, you know, our role in protecting Arizona's public is concerned. So I'm thinking, you know, maybe it will help everybody, you know, including Dr. Tarr, if we have some sort of an evaluation, you know, a fitness for duty evaluation and maybe even a substance use evaluation to go along with it, that will help sort of alleviate, if anything else, some of the concerns that we saw in today's meeting and in the materials that we reviewed. So that's sort of my thinking on this. And in addition to that, given sort of the time sensitive nature of that evaluation, I wonder if we need to sort of at least recommend to the full board that the board have a meeting, a special meeting if needed, expeditiously in advance of the upcoming February 9th meeting to make sure that that order, if that, you know, again, if that's the pleasure of the full board, to have a fitness for duty plus substance abuse evaluation, substance use evaluation done, then, you know, that decision needs to be made as quickly as possible to ensure that, you know, there's one, either, you know, nothing wrong, or if there are things wrong, then we need to do our job in protecting the people of Arizona. So that's sort of my opening discussion item. Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my thinking parallels yours as well, and I certainly agree on the issues. I think a good way for Dr. Tarr to put all this to rest would be to participate in a fit for duty type of evaluation. As I'm recalling, this same complaint has been filed with the California Board of Psychologist Examiners as well. I think that we need to respect the due process rights of Dr. Tarr. And I think a way to do that would be to, for this committee to recommend to the full board a fit for duty evaluation based upon the materials provided in the complaint, and then also the Dr. Tarr's responses today to questions from board members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. I'll just add, I mean, it. So just to sort of, again, as Dr. Stewart mentioned, the due process, we want to make sure that, you know, the concerns of the board are presented to Dr. Tarr in the hopes that, you know, she would sort of think of ways of effectively responding to those concerns. And my concern is our unprofessional conduct statute, 16 subsection L, which is practicing psychology while impaired or incapacitated to the extent and in a manner that jeopardizes the welfare of the client or patient or renders the psychological services provided ineffective. So that's the concern that I'm seeing. I saw a few other concerns, but I don't think they fit within any of the other subsections of our unprofessional conduct definition. Dr. Flint.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Dr. Stewart. I concur with what you have both said and will lend my voice of support to that. I think this is an excellent opportunity for Dr. Tarr to be able to demonstrate in her concern that she's been potentially mischaracterized in some way this fitness for duty eval would actually allow that process with an official evaluator to play out and really inform other questions that we might have. So I fully support that. I recognize that some may see that as an additional burden. In this case, I feel like it's a very prudent step. And if I might offer, due to the kind of short time period between now and our official next meeting, if for some reason we can't hold that special meeting that you mentioned, Mr. Dinar, that it for sure is a matter on the agenda for that upcoming February meeting.
Thank you, Dr. Flint. So with that, I think I'm prepared to make a motion on this. And I'll maybe ask for Ms. Galvin's help in a little bit. So I make a motion to, I make a motion to recommend to the full board a potential violation of Unprofessional Conduct Statute 16L. And as part of the recommendation to the board, I would include that the board consider ordering a fitness for duty evaluation and consider also ordering a substance use evaluation with it. And I would also recommend that the full board, that the board staff try to assemble a quorum of the full board as quickly as possible, given the time-sensitive nature of the harm to the public that this committee has identified. And if, for whatever reason, a quorum cannot be assembled before the February 9th meeting, then my recommendation would be that the full board consider this matter on the February 9th meeting that's upcoming.
Second.
If I may clarify, so this is a motion, refer the matter to the full board for possible violation of 2061-16L with a recommendation that the board issue an interim order for a psychological evaluation to include a fitness for duty component and a substance use component to be held as soon as the staff can get a quorum or at the latest at the board's February 9th board meeting. And that there is not, just so everyone understands, there's not an adjudication of the allegations of this underlying complaint because this would be in fact an interim order.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Yes, that's my motion. And I believe that's Dr. Stewart's second.
Second, yes.
And may I have a roll call?
Yes. Before roll call, any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please, Ms. Michelson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Flint?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
The vote is unanimous and passes.
Thank you. The motion carries. If there are any further questions, Dr. Tarr and Emma, you can contact our board staff and they'll be able to assist you. So that concludes all of the cases that are on today's agenda for the CSC meeting. As I'll exercise my moderator's privilege and adjourn the meeting at this time, it's 10:22 a.m. Thank you, everybody, for attending, and thank you to the committee members and staff for your hard work.